Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove, your home for fantasy MMA. I'm Brian Heminger, and normally I'd be joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night event, which takes place in Seoul, South Korea. Unfortunately, Nick will not be here today as he's currently welcoming his third child to the world. If you're a fan of his work, feel free to hop on Twitter and send him some positive messages. His handle is @FightOdds. Back to business. If you're unfamiliar with our show's format, I'll be breaking down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing significant film study for the event. Briefly looking back at our last event, the premium package bets for UFC Fight Night 78 went 1-1 to win 0.21 units overall. Our parlay on that included Bartosz Fabinski with the Leandro Silva Efrain Escudero over 2.5 rounds total was profitable, but we did lose our bet on Horacio Gutierrez. We also lost a half unit free bet on Diego Sanchez at 4:30. Just couldn't resist that one. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 79 features an 11 fight card in total and will be aired in its entirety on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday morning. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card, and all of this event will be on Fight Pass, is a welterweight matchup featuring Dong Hyun Kim, who is 13-6-3, and Dominic Steele, who is 13-6. Nick originally opened Dominic Steele as minus 185 favorite, with the comeback on Dong Hyun Kim being plus 145. Now, currently, the odds are minus 135 for Steele and plus 115 for Kim. So, definitely had quite a bit of money coming in on Kim thus far. Now, breaking down this fight, and just so everyone's aware, this is not the same Dong Hyun stun gun Kim. This is a completely different Dong Hyun Kim. He's making his UFC debut. This guy's nickname is the Maestro. Now, looking at this specific Dong Hyun Kim, he is 27 years old compared to the stun gun, who's in his early 30s. Trains with Seo-hee Ham and Kyung-ho Kang, some really talented, smaller South Korean fighters. And typically, he is a lightweight, but for this UFC debut on relatively short notice, he is bumping up to welterweight. He is a very strong offensive fighter, has some poor defense overall, and in my opinion, he's a front runner. He's the type of guy that is great when he's the one dictating the action, when he's the one pushing forward, when he's the one making his opponent react to him. But when things aren't going his way, if he gets put on his back, if he gets put against the fence, if he's the one moving backwards on the feet, he does not perform nearly as well. He kind of panics a little bit. So that is something to really keep an eye on. He does have a solid clinch when he's in the offensive part of it. He has good takedowns, and when he's in top position, he is very strong, has some great ground and pound. And despite the fact that he's typically a lightweight, he's actually going to hold a 1-inch height advantage. He's going to be a little bit bigger than Steele, although maybe I would not expect him to have the same strength. Now, looking at Steele, he's also 27 years old. This is his second UFC fight. He trains out of Team Vision in the Cincinnati-Dayton area. He is a very scrappy type of fighter, a grinder. He debuted on short notice, up a weight class at middleweight, and was very quickly TKO'd by Zach Cummings. And honestly, his chin is a bit questionable at this point. Out of his six career losses, four have come by some way of knockout. And the last one in particular, I mean, he took a beating. He didn't quite go down, but he got lit up by Cummings. And Cummings isn't exactly known as a powerhouse on the feet. Now, Steele is a bit of a brawler on the feet, and he prefers to push fighters into the fence and then try to secure top position and wear them down. He's not really a finishing threat. And I think what's going to happen in this fight is you're going to have the balance of Kim, who wants to be that offensive guy that's constantly working and making his opponent wilt, against Steele, who kind of tries to outlast his opponents. So, and I think what's going to happen here is Kim will probably get off to a decent start, and if he cannot put Steele away, and he very well could, if he cannot put Steele away, I can see Steele turning it on late as this fight goes and just outlasting Kim. So I think this is a very evenly matched fight. I'm not surprised whatsoever that some of the early monies come in on Kim, because he is a talented fighter, although who knows, maybe they thought that it was the other Tong Hyun Kim, and that's why the money's coming in. But I do think that Tong Hyun Kim will win this fight. I think he can pick up a knockout. He actually does have some good knockout power. And honestly, Dominic Steele is not, to me, much of a UFC-caliber fighter. He seems like the type of guy that got that opportunity because he was able to take a short-notice fight. But stranger things have happened, but I am picking Tong Hyun Kim to pick up the win here. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Ning Kyung Yu, who is 6-2-1 overall, taking on Marco Beltran, who is 6-4. Now, Nick opened this fight with Kyung Yu as a minus 180 favorite, with the comeback on Beltran being plus 140. And currently, Kyung Yu has actually jumped all the way up to a minus 230 favorite, with the comeback on Beltran being plus 190. And I can't say I fully agree with that. Looking at Kyung Yu, he's 33 years old, a fighter trained out of China. He does work with Tiger Muay Thai in the Philippines area. I mean, that's actually some good gyms with Roger Huerta, guys like Mike Swick train there, Brian Ebersole. So, you know, he's working with some good fighters. And he actually was the Tough China featherweight winner. He's a very powerful striker, but he's not very technical. He throws bombs, but he's a bit stiff. He also has decent leg and body kicks, but he doesn't typically go high with it, so he's not normally a threat to finish the fight with those kicks. And he can take top position in fights, but he does not do much for it. And I think the biggest issue with him is he does have a tendency to be inactive at times, to just kind of sit there and let the fight take place around him, like just kind of gets lost a little bit. And looking at Beltran, on the other hand, he's 29 years old, he's originally from Mexico. He was a contestant on The Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 1. Trains out of Chicago with some, you know, good fighters. He works with Coach Izzy Martinez, a guy that's worked with Greg Jackson and has worked with a lot of really talented UFC combatants. And he's also been splitting a little bit of his time with Rufus Sport and Anthony Pettis. He beat Marlon Vera in a very close decision on basically the Ultimate Fighter Latin America finale, which I believe was UFC 180. He's light on his feet, has some good boxing and kicks. He's not a great grappler, but he does hold decent top position, and when he is on top, he has good ground and pound. The other issue with him is he does fade a little bit down the stretch, although that could have just been UFC jitters. Now, looking at how these guys match up, basically, in my opinion, Beltran has significantly better overall pure striking compared to Kyung Yu, but Kyung Yu has the more threat of a finish with his power. I mean, he actually has good fight-ending power on the feet, and he could potentially knock Beltran out, but I'm not quite convinced that'll happen. Kyung Yu is very big and strong for the division, but he's not exactly a technical powerhouse in terms of being able to take guys down and control them. And I think what could happen here is maybe Kyung Yu gets a takedown, but I can see Beltran reversing the position. And then I can also see Beltran just being quicker on the feet and being able to outpoint Kyung Yu over the first couple rounds. Now, Kyung Yu might be able to turn it on late, and there's always that threat of the knockout with him, because he does pack a big wallop in his punches. But I actually think that this is Marco Beltran's fight to lose. Even though it wasn't pretty with him beating Marlon Vera, it was a very close fight. I think that he has a little bit more potential, and plus with Kyung Yu being 33 years old, the window is already starting to close on him, especially for the fighters below lightweight. You really need that speed and reaction time and everything the lighter you go. So the older you get, the harder it is for you if you're in those lower weight classes. So I'm actually going to pick the underdog here and go with Marco Beltran. Now dropping all the way down to the men's flyweight division, 125 pounds, we have Yao Zakui, who is 2-3 overall, taking on Freddy Serrano, who is 2-0. Now, Nick opened this fight with Freddy Serrano being the minus 270 betting favorite, with Zakui being plus 190. And currently, Serrano has actually dropped to minus 190, with the comeback on Zakui being plus 165. So the early money has actually come in on Zakui. And looking at how these guys performed in their last fights, Zakui, he's 24 years old. He actually also hails from China. He was another contestant on The Ultimate Fighter China. He has a lot of forward pressure when he fights, but he does not throw with a ton of volume. And he does have a little bit of decent pop in his punches, but he's not a huge finishing threat. He looks for takedowns, but again, he can't do much with his takedowns once he does get them. In his last fight against Nolan Tickman, he actually did pick up a surprise upset victory over the, you know, Kings MMA fighter. But I gotta say, I thought that Tickman won that fight. Tickman was moving backwards a lot and countering as Zakui was pushing forward. And I think the judges were favoring Zakui's aggression over Tickman actually outlanding him. I think most people scored the fight with Tickman getting the first couple rounds before Tickman got tired. So I was surprised that he picked up that decision. But again, I mean, it's not like Zakui's a bad fighter. That's actually a quality win. I mean, Tickman is a good, solid win for anybody. But I think people are giving him a little too much credit for picking that one up, because it was more, I think, a judge's decision than him actually earning it. But he does have a style that could help him win fights because he's always pushing forward. Now, looking at Serrano, he's actually 12 years older. He's 36 years old, hails from Colombia. He actually trains out of Texas, though, at the Octagon MMA gym, which is a solid overall gym. He's a tremendous athlete. He has an excellent wrestling base, very good power in his hands and legs. And in his UFC debut against Bentley Seiler, I mean, he picked up a nasty uppercut knockout. This guy has serious finishing ability at any moment's notice, but he can get a bit inactive at times, and it can be frustrating to watch him fight as well. He also gets a bit flat-footed as the fight wears on, but he makes up for it with his explosiveness, because most guys, they're always on their toes, and that's how they're able to move around and pick up big wins. But he actually was able to just explode forward and pick up that uppercut knockout off of being flat-footed, which was really impressive. The other thing is, he kind of throws one shot at a time instead of combinations. So that is an issue, and that actually is something that Zakui could take advantage of if he's the one that's dictating the action and pushing forward. And when Serrano is the guy that's trying to be the aggressor, he doesn't cut off the cage very well. So I don't see him being able to repeatedly corner Zakui. How this fight is going to play out is basically, I see Zakui trying to dictate the action, and I see Serrano landing big power shots on him while he's kind of moving backwards a little bit or trying to counter Zakui's aggression. I can also see Serrano picking up some takedowns here. I believe his UFC debut, Serrano fought at bantamweight against a larger fighter, and now he's fighting someone his own size. I can see Serrano being a bit of a bully here if he wants to be. He should be able to control Zakui on the ground, and then that can also counter Zakui's forward aggression on the feet. And overall, I just see Serrano being by far the better fighter, even though he is 12 years older. And I think that he actually has quite a few good fights in him, potentially. And I definitely see Serrano picking up this win. If not by decision, it could definitely be by knockout. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Seo-Hee Ham, who is 15-6, taking on Courtney Casey, who is 4-2. Now, Nick opened this fight with Courtney Casey being the minus 155 betting favorite to Seo-Hee Ham's plus 115. And right now, Courtney Casey is minus 165 to Ham's plus 145. So the line definitely tightened a little bit, and then also a little bit of money has come in on Courtney Casey. And I can understand why. Both of these girls actually fought Joanne Calderwood in their UFC debuts. And it was definitely Courtney Casey who had the bigger threat in that fight when they with this common opponent. Now, looking at Ham, she's 28. She hails from South Korea, so she's going to have that home field advantage. She has great movement on the feet, works good angles, has excellent combinations, doesn't have a ton of finishing power, at least in this division, but she does have a solid left hand that can cause some damage. I mean, she did bust up Calderwood's nose a little bit on the feet. Her big issue, though, is she's tiny. She's the smallest strawweight in the UFC right now. She clearly is a natural atom weight, if not even smaller. And she will get bullied by girls that are larger in the division. She initiates clinches sometimes, and I think that could really get her in trouble here against Casey. Now, looking at Casey, she's also 28 years old. She trains out of Power MMA in Arizona alongside guys like Ryan Bader, CB Dalloway. And she is huge for the division. She actually was an inch bigger than Joanne Calderwood. And she has power in her hands, but she is not technical. So if this fight is taking place in the middle of the cage, then Casey is going to be out of sorts. She's the type of fighter that needs to be backing her opponent up with big combinations. And even though they're not technical, I mean, she cracked Joanne Calderwood a little bit right at the beginning of their fight before she started to fade. So that is something to look out for. She could definitely hurt Ham and back her against the fence and then be able to drag this fight to the ground, which is clearly where she wants it. She has an excellent ground game, especially arm bars. She will also look for leg locks on the ground, but her big issue is conditioning. I mean, she's had conditioning issues in the past, and then in her UFC debut, it was super short notice, but she definitely ran out of steam after that early flurry where she actually had Calderwood in trouble. Once the fight went to the ground and she wasn't able to pick up a quick finish, Calderwood was able to just kind of hang out in her guard and beat her up over the course of three rounds, and Casey really wasn't able to offer much. She kind of becomes a bit of a punching bag as the fight wears on. Now, I'm sure that she addressed that in training camp, so we might see a completely different Courtney Casey, but that is something you absolutely need to keep an eye on as this fight wears on. If this fight is close and we're heading into a second round and Casey's starting to show signs of getting tired, you know, maybe toss a little bit of live bet action on Seohee Ham. But honestly, the big issue here with Ham is her size. She has the technique and skill and kickboxing and overall striking ability to hang with anybody in this division, but she just is fighting out of her weight class. She is way too small to be competitive against the best fighters, and I can see her definitely getting bullied right now in this fight. I can see her getting dragged to the ground and kind of mauled by just somebody that's so much more physical than her. And the other thing to keep an eye out for is if Casey's not able to get anything going, then Ham could turn her into a punching bag like has happened to Casey before. So definitely keep an eye out on this fight as it wears on. It could definitely be a good live betting scenario, but I am going to pick Courtney Casey. I do think that she either picks up the first round or two and then before starting to fade, or she might be able to get a submission victory early. So I'm going to pick Courtney Casey, but I am definitely exercising caution for everyone that is looking to get a lot of money on her early. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Tae Hyung Bang, who is 17-9, taking on Leo Kuntz, who is 17-2-1 overall. Now, Nick opened Bang as a minus 180 betting favorite initially, with the comeback on Kuntz being plus 140. And right now, the current betting lines are minus 165 for Bang and plus 145 for Kuntz. So basically, the lines have just tightened. There's nothing real crazy that's happened there. And looking at these guys overall, again, this is interesting UFC matchmaking. A lot of matches in this card are people about the same age. You have a Bang at 32 years old. Kuntz is also 32. And this is a battle of Korean top team against American top team. Bang, out of Korean top team, is a very slow starter. He likes to kind of keep his hands low and push forward. And then just everything is about his right hand. He kind of jabs out with his left hand to frame for the right hand, and then he'll just kind of explode forward with either a right hook or a straight right or sometimes an overhand right. Everything's about the right hand. He's really not a threat anywhere else. He's not a threat on the ground unless he knocks you down and he's trying to finish you off with ground and pound. He's not a submission threat. He's not a threat if you take him down. He's not a threat off his back. He's really, it's all about the right hand with him. And then Kuntz, on the other hand, he has decent low kicks, poor head movement. He's hittable. He doesn't have a great chin. He had a big, long winning streak outside the UFC, but most of it was against really poor competition on the North Dakota regional circuit. So you can't take a lot of it at face value. And when he's faced good competition, he's kind of been steamrolled. He stepped up and fought on The Ultimate Fighter, and he lost pretty badly. And then he also, in his UFC debut against Islam Makhachev, I mean, he got completely steamrolled in that fight. Makhachev basically had his way with him, both on the ground and on the feet, eventually just putting him away. So I think this is actually an evenly matched fight because Bang is so one-dimensional. And Kuntz, even though he's not particularly good, he's kind of that jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none, except it's more not even jack-of-all-trades. He's kind of just a little below average at all trades and not really particularly good at anything. So if Kuntz can kind of use that well-roundedness, at least the fact that he is able to do anything in other areas, he might be able to squeeze this one out, whether he can push Bang into the fence or get some takedowns or even work some kicks. But the threat of that knockout is definitely always going to be there because Bang, the last thing to go for fighters is power. And even though Bang's a veteran and he's been through a lot of wars, he definitely can still crack. So Kuntz absolutely needs to be careful about that right hand. And you got to say, one-dimensional fighters can still do damage. I mean, Dan Henderson's still knocking people out in 2015, so there is still the chance that Bang picks up this win, and honestly, I'm going to pick him, but I am zero confidence in this one. Absolutely none, but I am picking Taehyung Bang to get the knockout over Leo Kuntz. Maybe the home soil will help him out here a little bit. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Yui Chul Nam, who is 18-5-1, taking on Mike De La Torre, who is 13-5. Now, Nick originally opened Nam as a minus 155 betting favorite to the plus 115 for De La Torre. And currently, Nam is minus 120 and De La Torre is plus 100. So we definitely had some money coming in on De La Torre. And I have to say, I completely disagree with this one. Nam, he has the nickname the Korean Bulldozer, which I just love. He's 30 years old, also out of Korean Top Team. He's a southpaw, and he is extremely aggressive. He has heavy left kicks, really good power in both hands. He works a stiff jab, which he can hurt opponents with. And honestly, the biggest issue with him is sometimes he does run out of steam. I mean, he does have big power. He has a really good chin as well, and even though the grappling game isn't his strongest asset, he can actually hold his own against most people on the ground and reverse positions and get back to his feet for the most part. In his last fight, he took on Felipe Nover, and that was a very back-and-forth battle. Nover was constantly looking for takedowns the whole fight, what really wanted nothing to do with Nam on the feet, and Nam was able to hold his own in the grappling department and then outland Nover, and I think most people scored that fight with Nam winning, and Nover ended up taking a split decision. So I think I'm surprised that people are not giving Nam a little bit more respect, considering that he probably should have won that last fight. Now looking at Mike De La Torre, on the other hand, he's 29 years old. He is very, very aggressive, has an extremely exciting striking style. He kind of has this live by the sword, die by the sword mentality. And he's going out there you look at his fight against Thiago Trader, and he destroyed Trader. He was very aggressive in that fight and just took the fight to him. And a guy that we thought had a good chin, a guy that we thought was a solid Muay Thai practitioner, and De La Torre just blasted him. But then the issue with De La Torre, of course, is the fact that he is hittable, and even though he is extremely aggressive, it also, if he gets reckless, he does not have a very good chin. I mean, you saw that in his last fight, even though it was a bit controversial. I mean, Maximo Blanco put him out in less than 20 seconds. Now, yeah, the ref probably, Yves Levine, stepped in a couple seconds early, but I think that what would have happened there is Blanco just would have hit him like two or three more times and the fight would have been over anyway. So, really, I'm a bit surprised by all this line movement, because Nam hits very hard. He's not as explosive as Maximo Blanco, but he is just as powerful. And I can definitely see these guys just standing toe-to-toe and having a rock'em sock'em robot-style fight. And if that happens, and I actually do think this is going to happen, because neither of these guys are really great at fighting on the ground or try to initiate a lot of ground exchanges, then I see Yui Chul Nam picking up the win. He just, his chin will hold up in that type of fight. And I see De La Torre getting cracked at some point and getting put out. So I'm going to go all aboard the Korean bulldozer. And hopefully by the time I bet it, that he'll be plus money even. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card. It's in the middleweight division. We have the return of Dong Yi Yang, who is now 12-3 overall, taking on Jake Collier, who is 9-2. Now, Nick opened Dong Yi Yang at minus 125 to Collier's minus 115, so almost a straight pick'em. And currently, Yang is plus 115, while Collier is minus 135. So the early money has come in on Collier, and I agree with it. You look at Yang, he's 30 years old. He's a southpaw, has, you know, he actually does have big power, but he is a very low work rate. He really doesn't step up his striking unless he connects with something hard in his single shots and hurts his opponent. Then he'll swarm and go crazy. But for the most part, he kind of just sits back and lets the fight go and just responds to what his opponent's doing. And that has hurt him in the past. He actually went 1-3 in his first UFC stint, and every one of his losses was to a middleweight from the Ultimate Fighter season 11, I believe. I think he lost to Court McGee, he lost to Chris Camozzi, he lost to Brad Tavares. None of those, I believe, were knockouts. They were just fights where he got outworked and out-techniqued and outstruck over the course of three rounds. Now, the other issue that Yang has had is he's had a very inactive fight schedule. I believe he was released from the UFC in around 2012, and he's only fought about twice since then. Now, he did pick up TKOs in both of those fights. In one of them in particular, he, you know, landed some good shots, but again, looked extremely inactive at times. So that is something that could really hurt him here against Collier. Jake Collier, 27 years old. He's a solid wrestler, an aggressive striker. He was a RFA middleweight champion before coming over to the UFC on relatively short notice to make his debut. He's going to have a huge height and reach advantage in this fight. I believe 4 inches in height, 5 inches in reach. Collier does use his kicks really well. He has some solid low kicks, especially body kicks. He steps into them well, but he does not have the most technical stand-up. What really helps him, though, is he's just effective because he kind of throws his combinations and then he actually gets his hands up real quick and gets himself in positions where he's not able to get hit back or he's able to block his opponent's counter-strikes. So he's able to, for the most part, defend pretty well during stand-up exchanges. Collier actually was a big underdog in his last fight against Ricardo Abreu, and he picked up a, you know, it was a evenly matched, but he picked up a split decision victory and wasn't super controversial because it actually was a very close fight. All three rounds were super close, but I thought he deserved the win. He looked solid overall. Collier I think in this fight, what's going to help him is the fact that even though he's not the most technical guy, I think his kicks are going to be extremely effective here because he's going to be able to really pick apart Yang from the distance. And then if he wants to, he could also initiate some clinches and work for takedowns. And I think that he can be very effective here because I don't see Yang really threatening with submissions. Collier was looking for takedowns and doing a lot of good stuff in his UFC debut against Vitor Miranda, but he focused entirely on his striking in his last fight because Ricardo Abreu was just such a elite ground fighter, he didn't want to deal with it. But I think this time around, you're going to see a much more well-rounded attack from Collier in this fight. And I think that that's what's going to help him here, because Dong Yang, unless he has you hurt, he really does not initiate nearly enough volume in his striking attack. And I just see Jake Collier outpointing him on the feet and then working for takedowns and, you know, getting some points in that department as well. So my pick for this fight is going to be Jake Collier. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a featherweight contest between Du Ho Choi, who is 12-1, and Sam Cecilia, who is 15-5. Now, Nick opened Choi as the -210 favorite to Cecilia's +160, and right now, Choi is -230, and Cecilia is +190. So the line tightened a little bit, and a little bit of money has come in on Choi. And I agree with it for the most part. Choi is 24 years old. He is nicknamed the Korean Superboy. He's from South Korea. He is an incredible striker. Very aggressive. When he fights, he's not the type of guy, even though most guys, when they're real technical strikers, they prefer to sit back and counter their opponents. He's actually the initiator, and his offense is superb. His defense, however, is not so good. He keeps his chin up a bit. He is hittable. He is also very quick and has great power. And you saw that in his UFC debut when he picked up that extremely quick first-round knockout of Yasuel Puig. I think it's actually Yasuel Puig. And he did that in less than 20 seconds. So this guy definitely has that ability to finish a fight very quickly. And the other thing that I think is important to know, especially for this matchup, is he has an extremely aggressive ground game, especially trying to pass guard and get himself in positions to land ground and pound, but it's sloppy, reckless at times, and reversible. Now, moving on to his opponent, Sam Cecilia. Cecilia's 29 years old out of the Sick Jitsu Gym in the Pacific Northwest. His stand-up is really all about his right hand, a little bit kind of like Tai Hyung Bang, except not to that extent. And he will throw that right hand as a hook, as an uppercut. His left definitely is used with power, but it's primarily used to frame for the right hand to set that up. He's actually a decent wrestler and a good scrambler, and he has solid ground and pound. His ground game is actually a very underrated part of his game. If you look at his performances in the octagon, he's held his own for the most part against solid grapplers. The only guy that was ever really able to get the better of him on the ground was Cole Miller, and that was after hurting him first on the feet. You saw in his last fight, even though he wasn't able to get a knockout against Yautzen Meza, which I think a lot of people expected, he was able to hold his own in grappling exchanges, and he actually secured top position against Meza and threatened with some guillotine chokes. So I think Sam Cecilia could definitely be a threat on the ground in this fight, a lot more so than on the feet. And the other thing that could be very important here is the fact that Cecilia's chin is a little bit of a question mark. He has been knocked out by Honey Jason. He was knocked down by Cole Miller. And I don't think either of those guys are as explosive or dangerous on the feet as Choi is. Now, how this fight matches up on the feet, Choi should definitely be the guy that is the threat to put to end it at any moment when it's standing. But with the way that Choi's defense is so suspect at times, I can definitely see Cecilia landing that huge right hand at one point and potentially ending this, you know, Korean hype train. The other thing that could definitely come into play is the fact that Sam Cecilia's ground game is, in my opinion, better than Choi's. So if this fight goes to the ground, whether it's Choi initiating a takedown or Sam Cecilia pushing into the fence and trying to drag this to the canvas, I definitely see Cecilia securing top position. And from there, he can either stall or he can, you know, try to make something happen. So I think that this fight is very close. I think while it's deserved that, you know, the hype has come in on Choi and people are betting him, you got to be a little bit cautious here. This could be a trap fight. This is the third time that this fight has actually been booked. So Cecilia has been training for Choi for quite a while. And the previous two times it was Choi that had to back out with injuries. So I think Cecilia is frustrated and angry, and he could make something happen here. But again, this also could just be a showcase fight where they want to get this guy out there into the world and show people how talented he really is. There is a potential that this guy could be, say, the Korean version of Thomas Almeida on the feet. He really is that explosive and crazy on the feet, where he can make some pretty amazing things happen. So that is one thing to keep an eye out for, but Cecilia does have the skill set to potentially defeat him. So I'm picking Do Ho Choi, but you got to be a little careful here as well. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Yoshihiro Akiyama, who is 14-5 with 2 no contests, taking on Alberto Mina, who is 11-0. Now, Nick opened Akiyama as the minus 210 favorite to Mina's plus 160, and right now, Akiyama is only minus 160, and Mina is plus 140. So the early money has come in on Mina. I think that's a little bit of the fact that Mina is younger and he's undefeated, so you're getting a little bit of the Brazilian hype, but I don't quite see it that way. Akiyama, you know, he is 40 years old, and that could be it too, but if you look at his performances, you know, he is still an extremely talented fighter. Akiyama is of a mixed South Korean and Japanese descent, so I'm sure that the South Korean side is going to get a lot of cheers. He comes from an elite judo background, you know, world class. He has great throws, but even better trips on the inside. So that's something that Mina is going to have to be very careful with, because Mina has a traditional judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu background. And I think that that could get him into trouble if he is initiating clinches. When Akiyama's in top position, and he does land there a lot, even against, you know, elite fighters like Jake Shields, he has some excellent ground and pound. In the stand-up, though, he really doesn't have a lot of threats. There's about three things overall. He has a stiff left jab, a heavy right hand, and then a pretty nifty spinning back kick that he's pretty accurate with all three. Those are his big weapons. Occasionally, he'll throw a spinning back fist, but for the most part, he's a bit inactive, trying to just look for those openings to land either of those three strikes. Now, looking at Mina, he's 33 years old. He's Brazilian, but he trains out of Hong Kong right now. And as I mentioned, he has that judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu background. And both of these fighters are entering this contest with an over-year layoff. Mina, in his UFC debut against Shinzo Anzai, I gotta say, it was entertaining, but it was extremely, extremely ugly. He was forced into a lot of stand-up exchanges, and he has some very wild looping punches. He does have explosive knees, but he has super telegraphed uppercuts. I'm not sure if it was UFC jitters or not, but his conditioning also looked terrible. I mean, it was a slop fest in that UFC debut, and he did pick up a knockout win, but man, I don't know if he would have lasted into the second round with how the way that fight was going and how tired he looked and exhausted and sloppy and everything. And if that fighter shows up, he's going to have about 90 seconds to put away Akiyama before Akiyama destroys him. I'm not joking. I really think that this is a bad matchup for Mina. I see Akiyama being better than Mina in all the areas that Mina is a specialist in. And the only thing that I can see happening in this fight that helps Mina win is either his conditioning is better and he's able to push a high pace and keep this going for three rounds and just outwork Akiyama, and I do not see that happening, or potentially Mina catches Akiyama with a big crazy looping strike, and maybe Akiyama's just 40 years old and not quite able to get out of the way. But again, I actually think that Akiyama is going to have his way with Mina. I see Akiyama controlling the clinch if Mina initiates that. I see Akiyama getting top position on the ground and not getting submitted. And I think on the feet, with Mina being so reckless with those looping crazy strikes, I see Akiyama picking up some serious damage on the feet as well. I mean, he was able to outstrike Amir Sadala in his last fight, and that was a really solid, much more technical fighter than Alberto Mina. So I definitely think that this is Akiyama's fight to lose, and I'm going to pick him. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Dong Hyung Kim. This one's the real stun gun, who is 23-1, taking on Dominic Waters, who is 9-3. Now, Nick opened this one with Dong Hyung Kim being the minus 475 favorite, with the comeback on Waters being plus 325. And currently, Kim is all the way up to minus 700, with Waters being plus 500. So clearly the early action has come in on Kim, and I completely understand why. Kim was actually supposed to originally take on Jorge Masvidal, but Masvidal ended up substituting into the main event. We'll get to him in a minute. And Dominic Waters stepped in again on short notice. This will be Waters' second UFC fight, and they both will have been at short notice. Kim, he's 34 years old. He has excellent judo. Top control is superb. His wrestling is excellent. He has good ground and pound. And when he's on the feet, he does have good power, but he is very wild and reckless and sloppy. And you combine that with his poor chin, he can get himself in trouble on the feet. He did kind of fall in love with his stand-up after some really exciting knockouts of Eric Silva and John Hathaway, but I think he got brought back down to earth when he took on Tyron Woodley and got just brutalized, and where Woodley punished him for a spinning attack and knocked him out. And he fought significantly smarter in his last contest against Josh Berkman, where he was just constantly looking to get the fight to the ground, and then he ended up picking up a third-round submission. Waters, on the other hand, he's 26 years old, so he's 8 years younger. He was actually a member of the Ultimate Fighter Season 16 briefly, but he did lose to Mike Ricci on the show. He is athletic, but very raw. He lacks in technique. He has an aggressive skill set. And I don't know, he's also a type of front runner that I talked about earlier in the show, where he has good offense but poor defense. You saw that in his UFC debut against George Sullivan, where he was pushing the pace, but Sullivan was just a little bit more technical on the feet, and then Sullivan was able to counter some of his aggression and get top control on the ground. But this guy does have some heart because, you know, after clearly losing the first two rounds, he was able to take Sullivan's back in the third round and threaten for the finish before Sullivan kind of reversed it in the last minute or so and started dropping elbows on him. So he's the type of guy that won't give up, but I think that he is way out of his depth here. If he had trouble with George Sullivan, I think he's going to have nightmares against Dong Hyung Kim. Really, the only way I see Waters picking up a win here is if he picks up a knockout, because Dong Hyung Kim's chin is not good. Josh Berkman even did rock him a couple times in that last fight, but just couldn't quite take advantage of it. Didn't have a very smart game plan. He was trying to initiate clinches against an elite judo player, and it bit him in the butt real bad. And I can see, really, the only way Dominic Waters wins this fight is if they're standing and trading in open space and Waters just cracks him with something. And I just don't see that happening. I think Kim's going to be smarter than that. I think he's going to be trying to press Waters up against the fence constantly. I think he's going to wear Waters down. And if Kim can get on top of you, he does an extremely good job of making you carry his weight, which just tires you out twice as fast. He kind of just puts all of his weight on top of you, and that just really accelerates how tired somebody can get in a fight. And I think Waters is just out of his element. I think this is a twice as tough opponent as his UFC debut. And I think what's going to happen here is Kim's probably going to pick up a finish at some point in the first round or two. So my pick is going to be Donghyeong Stun Gun Kim. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Benson Henderson, who is 22-5, taking on Jorge Masvidal, who is 29-9. Now this fight is taking place in the welterweight division, even though these guys historically have fought at lightweight. Nick opened Henderson at -210 overall, with the comeback on Masvidal being +160. And right now, Henderson is -260 and Masvidal is +220. And I completely agree with that. The early action is on Henderson, and there's a reason. We'll just state that reason right now before we get into the technical breakdowns. Historically, Benson Henderson wins close fights, and Jorge Masvidal loses close fights. Now, I'll explain why in a minute. Henderson's 32 years old, trains out of the MMA lab. He does have some South Korean heritage, so he's going to have a lot of support in this fight, I believe. He is a solid grappler overall with a good, excellent base overall in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling. He has really good kicks with the Taekwondo base as well. And his low kicks in particular can be devastating. He actually kind of started a movement in the UFC of, instead of just kicking the upper and lower thigh on leg kicks, he started really jacking people in the calves. And that has actually become a pretty popular attack for people that are kicking people in the legs. And it started to do a lot of damage. You actually saw it a couple times in the last UFC event this past weekend. Now, Henderson is not really a combination striker, but he has really good forward pressure. He's always pushing the pace in fights. He has great conditioning. And one thing he does really well is he kind of no-sells his opponent's offense. So even if they hit on him, he just shakes it off and keeps going. He has a really good chin as well. The only person that's really ever been able to hurt him in a fight, at least recently, was Rafael Dos Anjos, who was the champ. Now, Masvidal, on the other hand, he's 31 years old, trains out of American Top Team. He is an excellent, excellent technical striker, and he has a very underrated wrestling and grappling skill set. His issue is he can get inactive at times. Even though he is such a good technical striker, he gets stuck in situations where he is just picking his spots a little bit too much instead of just initiating and setting the tone of the fight. And kind of pushing forward, he kind of lets his opponent dictate things and then reacts to it, and that can get him in trouble. He does have a tendency to lose a lot of close decisions. The fight that knocked him out of the lightweight division against Ally Aquinta, I mean, he almost finished Ally Aquinta, and I thought he won all three rounds of that fight just by being the far more technical fighter. And Aquinta is a good striker as well, and Masvidal was just running circles around him technique-wise. But Aquinta won because he was the one pushing forward, and the judges saw it that way. So that's something that I think could get Masvidal in big trouble in this fight, especially with it, you know, being a main event. That's even more time for Benson Henderson to push forward and win over these judges. He's already going to have the crowd support, and with it being a five-round fight, I think it's going to be really difficult for Masvidal to win unless he gets a finish. And I just don't see him being able to do that. This fight is going to be competitive, though, because Masvidal is such a solid technical striker. He has some very dangerous knees. When the fight's up close and personal, he has some good elbows. He actually used an elbow to initiate the finish of his last fight in his welterweight debut, where he knocked out Cesar Butanche Ferreira in the first round. And you look over at Benson Henderson, and in his welterweight debut in the UFC, he had a main event against Brandon Thatch. And what he did was he just kind of used that Homer Simpson defense almost, where he just let his opponent tire themselves out a little bit. And then in the fourth round, when Thatch started to fade a little bit, Henderson was able to get the fight to the ground and then pick up a submission. And I think what's going to happen here is Henderson will be a lot more willing to engage with Masvidal because he's someone his own size. And it's going to be a good, solid back and forth because Henderson, in his fight against Donald Cerrone, who I think is a fighter just as technical and as good of a striker as Masvidal, he, in my opinion, won that fight. He was the aggressor. He kind of stopped Cerrone in his tracks with a really, really good game plan. And he ended up losing a decision. Again, another one that I thought went the other way. But I thought if he uses that game plan in this fight, that there's almost no way that Masvidal is going to win just because of the way that Masvidal fights, trying to just pick his spots a little bit. So unless Masvidal has completely shifted the way that he fights, I think he's going to get himself in some serious trouble here. If this goes to decision, I cannot see Masvidal winning it. And really the only way I see Masvidal winning is if somehow he's able to use his wrestling for five rounds and put Henderson on his back, which I think is going to be really difficult, or picking up a knockout. And even though he did knock out Mutanch in that last fight, I don't see him knocking out Benson Henderson. So I think at some point Benson Henderson just runs away with this one a little bit and walks away with a decision. It might be competitive, but I think it's Benson Henderson's fight to lose. So I'm going to pick him. So that'll do it for my full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 79. Now, part two of the Premium Odds Cast featuring our premium bets will be out Friday morning following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. And yes, Nick should be here in time for the early Friday morning to do the part two podcast. Now, if we have a free bet to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsors, Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.